News of no-go zones in London and Birmingham are sweeping the UK as the internet falls in love with a shoddily put together scam event that is designed to swindle people from their money that was helmed by a kind of serial con artist. Jeremy Corbyn has just become leader of the Labour Party, and we are excited to see if socialism will come to Britain here in 2017.
Oh, I love being in 2017. Mm. The last year that it's going to be before everything gets so much better, I assume.
Yes.
Yeah. That's what D. Ream wrote that song about.
Yeah.
It's the free one.
Things can only get better in 20 years' time.
That's right.
Yeah.
No. It is 2024.
Yeah, you hit your head really hard.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry to have to tell you this, but it turns out that Jeremy Corbyn was actually a member of kind of like Hamas, I guess. I was surprised too.
Our version of the scammy event now no longer taking place in the beautiful islands of the Caribbean, but in sunny Glasgow instead.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I'm always in favor of regionalization. The Scottish economy doesn't get nearly enough attention. And given that the British economy is mostly scams, it's nice to see that, you know, things are moving up here and we as a city are diversifying beyond burning down historic buildings to turn into student flats.
Yeah, was Ja Rule involved in the Willy Wonka experience?
Well, Ja Rule was banned from the UK. Like, you see the Instagram post he posted where he was like, yeah, I'm not allowed to come to the UK, so I can't play any of my UK shows. So, bit suspicious.
He would have enhanced the Willy Wonka's chocolate experience.
One Ja Rule for him, quite another for everyone else.
Oh, God.
I'm sure most people listening to this will have seen the fabulous Willy's chocolate experience in
the fabulous chocolate Willy experience. Yeah, I've been on a hen day.
The fabulous chocolate experience that was sold.
A fabulous chocolate experience of a nature we're not going to get into here.
Yeah. The Lint Master chocolatiers of the fabulous experience.
Hiring a kind of like stripper Lint Master chocolatier.
Oh, yeah.
Just tearing off the chef's white.
At this chocolate experience, you were going to get to enjoy enchurning and entertainment, including Karchi Tons, catcating, and Exarstray lollipops.
Yeah, I think I saw them at the Academy one time.
Yeah, because AI-generated advertising materials. Mm-hmm. I love how quickly that's become a case of, like, not only are we generating all of our advertising materials with AI, but we can't even be bothered to correct the text in them that makes no sense. We're just like, whatever.
Yeah, this is what happens if you do the bare minimum now, is everything is sort of like uncorrected AI text and weird AI images. And so this like chocolate event had backdrops that were just printouts of AI images looking really shit and disconcerting at the same time.
My view on Willy's chocolate experience, I have decided, I have looked at all the evidence, I've weighed it up in my mind, I have put it in front...
Like a high court judge.
I have put it in front of my mental star chamber, and I have determined that this is the single best piece of art that materially involves AI. Why is that? Why is that?
I mean, this is the thing, right? I think this existed before AI, right? This kind of scam. We've seen it happen before of, like, parents taking their kids to the, like, Winter Wonderland or whatever. Yeah. And Santa is, like, a stolen H&M mannequin that's having its sort of, like, arm gnawed off by, like, an XL bully that's disguised as a reindeer, right? Like, this is it's a known fact in this country that, like, if you try and take your kids to an event, you will be punished for hubris, right? Because your kids, you know, fuck them. They're going to get enough events as they grow up anyway. Like,
yeah, climate events.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, once in 100-year events will be happening to them pretty much hourly by the time they reach adulthood. So, like, yeah, to take them to, like, a Christmas event or some kind of strange Willy Wonka-themed event is courting disaster. But what's happened here is that, like, that sort of, like, baseline of this is obviously going to be a scam, it's going to be done with, like, the minimal effort required, is now AI-enabled. And while that doesn't make it much more efficient, it does make it much stranger.
Precisely correct.
Yeah.
The example I think of here, right, is these very odd characters and stage directions that the that ChatGPT essentially inserted into this performance. If you're sitting down in front of an AI and you're like, I'm going to make some good art by writing a prompt, you are hamstrung by your very efforts. It will never succeed. If you sit down in front of an AI and think, I can use this, I can put this AI, some actors, and some gullible parents together to make a quick buck, and I don't care what comes out the other side of it, then you are using AI correctly, because what you are then generating...
You are Marina Abramovich accidentally.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing, right? The hill that I'm willing to die on, right, in order to excuse myself for occasionally using it for shitposts, is that AI can never be good, but it can be funny, right? And I don't think there are many human writers that would have come up with the concept of introducing a villain into the Willy Wonka, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Who's not Willy Wonka?
Yeah, canon called The Unknown. Like,
yeah, awesome.
I mean, I'm sure, again, most people will know this because it's been now endlessly covered because it's just so odd. But the inserting a kind...
Our first proper meme of 2024.
Feels good.
It's very sweet.
But of inserting a kind of randomly generated villain into Willy Wonka, but then, crucially, giving that character to a local Glaswegian actor to kind of just do his best at kind of improvising.
I'm the unknown. You didn't ken me.
The poor fucking Oompa Loompa lady. She was interviewed in Vulture, and again, you get the sense that, like, this all existed before AI. You know, if you were a stand-up comedian or an actor who was, like, looking for work, a lot of this stuff would be coming your way anyway. But really, to just be handed, like, a small bag of jelly beans, a script written by ChatGPT, and to have, like, some Glaswegian children thrown at you and be like, go on.
I don't think there was even a bag of jelly beans. I think it was one jelly bean and half a cup of lemonade. Of, like, cheap Tesco lemonade.
Incredible.
Also, like, a really interesting, like, case study. I think of, like, when like, you know, because the whole premise of like, the AI boosters has been that this will sort of facilitate human beings in sort of everyday situations. It will elevate their processes. It will sort of streamline them. It will make everything more effective. And so even if, like, you know, things are a bit patchy, like, you know, ultimately it'll be fine. And I think this is one of the good examples of, like, no, this is what happens when a human is sort of kind of directed by AI in the way that these systems are designed. It just becomes this very weird and odd and, like, detaching experience. And, like, the whole of the aesthetics around it. I mean, partly this isn't, I don't want to sort of, like, blame the AI. I think the AI is just, like, one layer, like, an extra layer on top of this that makes it both more funny and absurd. I think, you know, this is very much, like, sort of reminiscent of a British experience more broadly, like, very half-assed, costs way too much, basically tells you to fuck off at the same time. Yeah. But the AI element of it just adds, like, this other sense of both apathy and, like, lack of care. And just, again, it's like another layer of just telling you to go fuck yourself.
Well, it's Britain is the country that invented painting a horse like a zebra and saying, Fiverr a look or fuck off, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a great, noble national tradition. You know?
My favorite thing about it is, like, the image of, like, the AI Wonka image. But it's sort of taped to a wall. It doesn't even fill the whole wall. It's like this really, like, almost like just slightly bigger than A3 page, but it's just taped. It's just taped onto a wall. And there's like There's like a not like a barricade, but like there's like a
like an arch that bit.
No, like that thing that, like, sort of blocks. You know? Oh fuck, I don't know.
Oh,
but like,
yeah. Like a crowd control barrier.
Like a crowd control barrier, but like. It's just,
yeah, because you don't want the children attacking the AI Willy Wonka picture.
Yeah, you wouldn't want them to think that it's actually real and they might be able to go through that tunnel, which is sellotape to a wall and not even, like, properly straight.
I think this is a key element of it, right, is that what's so funny about it is that they put the funniest possible level of effort in, which was not none. Like, I've seen actually worse than... I think, like, the Winter Wonderland one was worse. Like, there were weirdly ornate bits of this. Like, there was, like, a big archway and stuff, and there was, like, the woman in the Oompa Loompa costume, like, doing her best. And then there's other things, which, as you say, is just like a picture of Willy Wonka taped to the wall. Yeah.
But coming back, I think, right, by the way, the funny thing, I think, was the unknown was attempting to steal Willy's anti-graffiti gobstopper, which, where, what piece of deranged fanfic did ChatGPT Hoover this out of?
This is very. This is like an assembly that my senior school headmaster would have given. Like, this is my anti-graffiti gobstopper. And if I see any of you graffitiing the lockers around the school, I'm going to suck, suck, suck on my anti-graffiti gobstopper, and it's going to tell me who did it. So
sounds like a very.
And then I shall become leader of the Labour Party.
He was very Starmer. He really. I mean, he didn't sound like Starmer, but he had like a moustache, and he wore those like. You know those like thick school shoes that like the unfortunate children had to wear at primary school? Like he used to wear a pair of those with a suit and he used to give very long speeches in assembly about like incredibly boring topics about like the time he tried to build a wall and failed and what this taught him about, you know, like the spirit of perseverance or whatever.
What I think is just so, what I find compelling about this isn't any particular element of it, but rather that everything about it was so AI generated, and AI generated sort of scripts, or at least if you use the free version of ChatGPT, which he clearly has, this is not GPT-4, this is 3.5.
Yeah.
Has certain ways of, because like I've experimented with possibly using it to run a paranoia game where you are basically troubleshooters working for a computer that is insane, which I think it kind of would work well for, but it has these strange circular ways of talking. It tends to always sort of go back to where it started. And asking it to write a play where it doesn't just include stage directions, but also audience reactions, but then glosses over details such as, well, and then Willy Wonka defeats the unknown by hoovering him up with a Dyson or whatever, which is what was in the script here. Mm. But then to give that to people and be like, well, go on, do this. You know, it is finally taken. This is why I think it is ultimately good AI art, because it is asking people to take seriously something very weird and perturbing. And it also gave us the picture of that kid dressed as an Oompa Loompa giving two thumbs down.
Yeah, the reverse Trump. Equally orange, but different in affect.
Like the prestige is not doing a shitty thing and trying to like make off with the money. The prestige is to do this and have everyone actually trying their best to make it happen. And being let down only by the strangeness of like the hallucinations that a poorly prompted AI is unable to stop making.
Well, yeah, well, I thought about for a minute, like, what would I have done if I had been hired to work at this for the day? And honestly, just thinking about it, like, gave me a panic attack. Like, the idea of being the fucking the stand-up comedian that they hired to be Willy Wonka, I was like, this is hell. This is hell for stand-up comedians.
Yeah, hell for stand-up comedians. It's not the stag party that never stops joining in. It is Willy's Chocolate Experience.
Yeah.
But it's bringing the stag party to Willy's Chocolate Experience.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah, not the Chocolate Willy Experience, which the stag party are very much engaging in.
The other fun thing before we move on about this was, of course, the guy who put it on is addicted to, like, scammy AI-based content. Like, as soon as ChatGPT was released, he had like, you know, 7 quite conspiratorial books out on Amazon that were, again, clearly AI generated.
It's just awesome. Chancing, right? And like the thing is, we've been proven right about a bunch of stuff again when we said that like pretty soon your job's going to be like as shit, except slightly more shit because it's going to be like supervised by an AI. But the other thing is that like, it was extremely unpopular for obvious reasons, and you got a lot of very funny videos of this guy standing behind a bouncer he had hired while a sort of angry parent shouted at him. I think it just goes to show that, like, yeah, this stuff is going to be foisted on you, but, like, everyone hates it, and it's really obvious when it's being used. And people just, you know that they're being sold a bill of goods and know that it's shit.
And it's also sort of telling that the things that people did find endearing about it, which was just like the strange movements of the unknown, or like the facial expression of the woman who had to like play the Oompa Loompa at the meth lab. And like, those are the things that like people found appealing. It's like the stuff that wasn't generated by AI, the stuff that wasn't like part of the AI instruction manual, are like the things that people actually find to be like somewhat moving or interesting. And like, if there's any sort of indictment as to, or if there's any sort of like, kind of rejection of AI as sort of like a foundation, like a way of sort of kind of being creative or artistic in any form, even among people who sort of suggest that perhaps there is kind of some use for it. I think that's a good example of like, well, actually, probably not.
Yeah, everyone hated it, except for the strange bits of unpredictable humanness that the humans brought.
And it doesn't even work enough for like a short con, right? You can't like do this, take people's money and flee town. Yeah. Because people take one look at it and go, give me my money back, I'm calling the police.
This is sort of the other thing too. It's like, it would be incredibly easy. It's incredibly easy. Like, I actually don't want to say it's incredibly easy because I think event planning is quite hard, but... If you're going to do like Wonka stuff, like there are like several, there are beats that you can sort of hit that will sort of make it passable, right? Mm-hmm, and the thing about Wonka and the associations with it is like that at the very least is like have a bunch of sweets around. Like that could have probably saved this thing. But
yeah,
like,
kids love candy. Yeah.
Like, but like the fact that it was so low effort to the point of just like, it was worse than like the shit that, you know, Apprentice, like you see on The Apprentice, I think is just very telling as to sort of, like the reliance on this as a system kind of just means that you're almost sort of like removing or sort of ignoring all logical faculties that can be like, yeah, maybe this might just need like another bottle of lemonade.
Now, you've organised a Willy Wonka experience, but yeah, you've got some geezer there called the Unknown. Well, it's not even in the book. Karen, is that in the book? That's not in the book, is it? And then you've got no sweets. You've got a woman running what looks like a meth lab. She's talking. She's giving them one jelly bean. I mean, why would anyone pay £35 for that?
That's that on The Apprentice.
We can move on. We can move on.
Can we? Can any we can. Of us really move on?
We're going to move on to Saudi Arabia, the Willy's chocolate experience of countries.
Yeah, they would not. Neom is like that plus time.
Yeah, we've introduced the unknown into Vision 2030.
One woman dressed as a nomad handing out baklava.
No, we've given the unknown some rimless glasses, and he is now creating a new kind of parallel line chocolate factory.
I'm Torben Unknown.
Well, here's the thing, though. The rimless glasses European Saudi Arabia working consultants, they're getting off scot-free.
That's like an Anglo-Saxon kenning. Incredible sort of assemblage of words there.
We are looking at a possible, let's say, series of difficulties for American firms that are engaged in consulting with Saudi Arabia, including on projects like NEOM, as well as projects like...
But we love those guys. They're so likable and friendly, and we definitely don't think that they in any way deserved this, or what's happening to them might be funny.
So, what is happening is that a number of a Senate subcommittee is investigating how Saudi Arabia is using soft power, such as sports investments and so on, to extend influence in the U.S. And so a number of consultancies, such as McKinsey, BCG, and others, were hauled up before a Senate subcommittee hearing, basically to testify exactly what they've done. So Richard Blumenthal, the person who had the bee in his bonnet about this, said, "We want to determine what work these companies have done and are doing that allows a foreign sovereign to use instruments and commerce of the United States to increase its influence within our shores and rebrand its tarnished image after years of horrific human rights abuses." Me too, Richard. Me too.
Sure. I think it's cool how the U.S. foreign policy establishment kind of works like this, where you give the Saudis everything they want for years, and then like one guy gets pissed off at them for kind of an obscure reason, and now the whole thing kind of pivots a little bit.
Yeah.
And then it's a good, sustainable system.
Speaking from inside a suitcase, the McKinsey spokesperson had this to say.
So essentially what has happened, right, is the Senate is subpoenaing a number of documents from these American companies as to their work in Saudi Arabia.
What have you been doing for like MBS?
How many different shapes did you propose to MBS?
Yeah, what kind of... Have you been optimizing his, like, bone saw regimen?
Yeah, they gave him access to secret shapes developed by the Pentagon.
Well, they gave him access to the Pentagon.
Well, they're gonna... No, that's the shape they want you to think. They want you to think they stopped there. The Pentagon has been developing secret non-Euclidean shapes.
This is something that I would fully hear, like, shouted into traffic by someone.
Yeah. And that someone is me.
So, the PIF, meanwhile, the Saudi Sovereign Wealth Fund, sued the four firms, namely BCG, McKinsey, and a couple other smaller ones in Saudi Arabia, claiming that the documents demanded in the U.S. were classified and could not be shared.
Yeah, some of those shapes. I mean, for instance, you know they've got line. That's one already.
Yeah.
And then new Maraba is cube. So that's they're working very quickly. towards a higher level of shape.
They have aquilum, which is vertical line.
Yeah, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, so
Jesus Christ, it's Jason Bourne.
My God.
These two guys, Bob Sternfels and Rich Lesser.
I'm Rich Lesser.
Richard the Lesser and Bob the Gracer.
Yeah.
Are both saying, look, we can't, because otherwise we will go to jail in Saudi Arabia.
I think it's really funny for a McKinsey guy to like sail between Scylla and Charybdis like this. I also think it's really funny that considering what most of these people do for Saudi Arabia, which is like go to MBS and be like, you should spend 12 trillion quid on golf tours, that is something that the Saudis are like instinctively so protective of that they are willing to like threaten to jail these people. Like you are getting in trouble with two governments at once, and neither of them are the kind of government that you want to like particularly fuck with. And what you've done to earn that is you've gone to a meeting with MBS, been out of ideas, had your Don Draper moment, gone to the whiteboard and written, get Taylor Swift to start dating a golfer. And for that, Mohammed bin Salman has gone, if you tell anyone about this, I will fucking bonesaw you.
Do you want to move to a new city I'm building that's shaped exactly like a suitcase and is sized like a suitcase and also is a suitcase?
Yeah, new cabin luggage. The fucking luxury dining district in there sucks, by the way.
Yeah, the partnership with Samsonite that the Saudi royal family are doing.
It's like a sort of dual-handed thing. You've got one side is Samsonite, the other is Husqvarna.
Yeah.
No, wait, this is a new kind of luggage for Saudis, which has a chainsaw built in. Like, you can just beat someone into it.
Yeah.
Like a shredder.
It later turns out that much like those sort of, like, powered luggage things, you just can't take those on airlines. But
have you ever been at the airport and found that you cannot fit all of your luggage into the suitcase? Well, this is no longer a problem because of the Samsonite Husqvarna chainsaw suitcase. For example, I cannot fit this whole journalist corpse into my suitcase, but this is no longer an issue for me.
So that's the thing, right? It's those guys, the guys you're doing an impression of, Milo, they're fine. Because European governments like, Jesus Christ, thank God. Okay, just keep being an industry.
Mm. We're too desperate and we know better to like fuck around with this. Whereas the US is still powerful enough that like one guy can like turn it slightly on its axis. And all of a sudden you have guys in between like the bone saw and you know, the deep blue sea.
If you're Rich Lesser or, you know, Todd Grunfels or whatever the first guy's name was.
Rich. I'm lesser rich than I used to be, hey.
If you're Bob Sternfels and Rich Lesser, then you're like, well, wait a minute, no. I was supposed to be immune from this kind of thing. This is going and doing this stuff for the Saudis. That's just like, that's just pay dirt. That's just getting $1 billion to say, as you say, November, what if Taylor Swift dated Phil Mickelson? What if that, first of all?
Age gap discourse, that's what.
I mean, yeah, functionally, there is a kind of like capitalist diplomatic immunity there. You are like an ambassador from the kind of international non-country of wealth. Mm. And, you know, that's something that the Saudis have been like reluctant to fuck with. So I wonder what's there that is making them this secretive about it.
What I think is very funny, this is not going to give any insight into what's there that's making them so secretive. I mean, generally, I think it's just what they're doing is saying, well, no, this is our stuff. You can't take our stuff that we own, America. Like, they're trying a bit of a kind of very stupid power play.
Oh, with the Saudis? That wild.
I read a golf magazine, a golf industry magazine called Playing Through, that had a really detailed article about this.
A golf industry magazine called Playing Through. It sounds like a euphemism for shitting yourself.
When you said a golf industry magazine, I thought like, oh, so like Bahrain or like Oman or Qatar.
What, the
like,
industry of being in the golf?
Yeah, the being in the golf industry.
Hey, that's an industry for these guys.
Well, no, there's also Golf, which is a golf industry magazine about golf and the golf. I like when sometimes we become Have I Got News For You and we have like a publication of the week.
Yeah.
So, Playing Through interviewed, you know, someone from like the director of responsibility to protect and, you know, and bombing institute at a university.
Weird that they named an institute that.
You know what I mean. says, I think this is a strategic... Ben Freeman, the director of the Democratizing Foreign Policy Program at the Quincy Institute.
There's like 500,000 of these types of guy in particular.
Yeah,
sure.
Ben Freeman, it's in the name. He loves being free.
It doesn't say Ben Bonesword Man, does it?
No.
I think this is a strategic blunder for the consultancies. If you comply with this inquiry, you adhere to the subpoenas, you provide the documents and everything, I don't think people would care as much, nor would they have as many questions as they do now. The fact that they obfuscate so much, it really looks like they have something to hide. And it's quite possible that not only will the principals of BCG, McKinsey, and so on have to register as foreign agents of the Saudi government, but famous golfers working in LIV might too. So Phil Mickelson is going to have to register as a foreign agent.
Tiger Woods, Saudi agent. I'm very here for this, actually.
The infinite gravy train of working for the Saudis might, let's say, reaching a bit of a squeaking place. I want to do one more thing, one more little thing, before we move on to the startup and then our sort of core topic about what's going on with all those war crimes investigations in Britain. Very, very, very quickly. I don't like spending too much time on the royals, but there's a bunch of royal stuff happening. Because the king...
Or not happening, as the case may be.
So the king is now officially dying.
Dead. He's dead. He's dead. 100% dead. Look, I was right about the queen. I'm going to be right about this as well. I'm getting out ahead of it. Already dead. In the fucking ground already.
Saudi economic collapse. King dead.
Yeah, Saudi economic collapse. King dead. New shapes are being invented every day in the, like... tetrahedron beneath the Pentagon.
Yeah. As a wise man once said, the king is absent. Long wait the king.
Well, the thing is, like, Charles loves homeopathy and hates modernity and doctors and all of this. And on that basis, like, it's not looking good. Like, I feel like cancer is one of those things that you really don't want to apply homeopathy and other kind of like useless treatments.
I mean, there's a guy in Glasgow who's like quite good at AI and has some ideas about how to resolve it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, like, and that guy is the unknown.
I don't do homeopathy, I'm straight.
just like talking to your oncologist and you're like, you know, obviously it's very frightening in and of itself, but mostly what I'm afraid of is the unknown. And then, yeah. And then the guy fucking pops out. From behind the mirror.
Well, no, that guy in Glasgow is now starting the King Charles arsehole experience, where it's like all themed around the inside of the king's rectum.
And you still only get half a cup of lemon squash.
Yeah, that's right. Mm. It's dyed brown.
Bunch of Rangers fans crawling out there.
Yeah.
But the sort of presumptive queen, in waiting at least, appears to also have been now missing for like 3 months.
Yeah, so this is an interesting little like internet conspiracy theory that kind of isn't a conspiracy theory, where she had this like operation and then she just hasn't been photographed for as you say, for months and months, which is, I don't care, believe me, I care a great deal less than a lot of people, but like, it's weird. And you put these two things together, particularly this thing of like, you know, nobody's seen the king, nobody's seen Kate together, and the only possible solution in my mind is that the royals are doing white people get out to each other.
I was actually going to say, so I was going to say that I feel like the actual answer to this is that they're doing face off.
Yeah, face off in many ways, the white people get out anyway.
Yeah. The things got a bit weird, so now they both have the same face as Nicolas Cage.
Oh. I'm the king, and you're going to listen to me.
No, I'm serious. I think they're going to try and like put Charles's brain in Kate's body, and that's, you know, he's going to continue himself that way.
Yeah. And then William will have the most normal sexual relationship anyone in that family has ever had while fucking his hot dad.
This is all an elaborate plot to make William's dad hot so that he can fuck him.
I think they've done reverse Die Another Day and they've made both King Charles and Kate Middleton Korean. And they've just released them into
fine.
The wild.
I just didn't expect it to be Korean.
Yeah, that's, imagine if they did that and they just carried on as normal and didn't mention it at all. Like, because what would anyone do? Like, you couldn't, you know, even the British press would have to be like, do we comment on this?
Trying to work out whether or not they should be racist.
Like, there's nothing wrong with them being Korean. It's unexpected.
you just leave it to like Giles Corran to write an insanely racist column about it.
Well, no, he's going to have to change. You know, the winds will have changed direction. He's going to have to become Giles Korean. He's just comparing every restaurant to like you know, barbecue. He's like they're not using the fresh gochujang at Le Gavroche anymore.
Well, there we go. That's why we podcast, folks.
There you go, Giles Korean. There's a thought.
Yeah, what if it was that?
Just make it the fucking episode title.
Yeah, cool, done, tick. But at the same time, right, Donald Trump has said Prince Harry's going to be on his own if I get back in.
The funniest possible thing for him to take a position on. It's like, bro, you are quite possibly going to be president again. There's like 50 cases against you. And what this is why Trump is the way he is, because what's he commenting on? He's selling you like gold sneakers, and he's being like, Prince Harry, very, very unfair to his racist family.
He's not even Korean. The rest of the family, they weren't Korean, they did folk. They're reading kimchi.
This is why Trump got on so well with Kim Jong-un, you know?
Prince Harry says, oh, I don't want to be Korean. Why are they cracking a raw egg into my rice? I don't like it. I don't want to be... I don't like a strict social hierarchy based on age. I don't care for that at all. No, he'd rather come over here.
Prince Harry refusing to start counting his age at one. It's why people get out. I think that like Diana was the early case study for this. And I think that the royals, as the white people of white people, are trying to do the fucking Coagula procedure. And that's why we haven't seen any of them.
Riley has sent me a Donald Trump quote to read.
This is what he said about Harry.
I wouldn't protect him. He's betrayed the Queen. That's unforgivable. He'd be on his own if it was down to me. We have an important rule in this hive. You don't betray the Queen. I'm a worker. I'm like everyone else. I'm a worker. We gotta protect the honey. We got lots of honey in the hive, haven't we? We love the honey, don't we, folks? But they don't want to make it anymore because of woke.
Just briefly, the reason he said he wouldn't protect him is that Harry's visa in the U.S., because he said he did drugs once in a book, like, well, technically you shouldn't have been given, is the Heritage Foundation has launched a legal case to get him deported
this
out of spite.
This is so fucking weird. Like, imagine caring about this, especially as an American. Like, not to, like, buy into their national bullshit too much, but they had a war not to care about this.
Benedict Arnold would have been a very respectful guy, in my opinion.
Being like an American who cares about the monarchy, particularly an American who cares about the monarchy like positively, is some of the most cooked you can be, in my opinion.
It's so many of them, though.
Yeah.
It's like the Brits who are into the NFL.
I have a startup, and then we're going to talk a little bit about Jonathan Mercer, a man who's always trolling the Plymouth Herald comment section.
That's right.
Johnny Mercenary.
Be one last chance at honesty.
I'll give you all one last chance at honesty. Clue. Q-L-O-O.
Clue. Are we
going to be
like
fucking... Levantine Arabic, it would be like clue.
Clue.
It doesn't help me very much.
It's a Swedish type of quaalude.
This is what we're replacing detectives with after we abolish police.
Yeah, that's right. DCI Gene Hunt is going to... His consciousness will be uploaded into Clue. Fire up the quattro.
Clue is the leading AI platform on culture and taste.
Ooh.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, providing consumer taste data and recommendations for leading companies in the entertainment, publishing, retail, travel, hospitality, and packaged goods sectors.
Wait, so it's like a survey thing. It's like your phone grabs you and goes like, do you like this? Do you like this, you piece of shit? Tell us.
I'm DCRG Nun, and I'm going to tell you if it's proper stuff or if it's for fucking pansies.
Their proprietary API predicts consumers' preferences and tastes across a dozen major categories, including music, film, television, podcast, dining, nightlife, fashion, consumer products, books, and travel. Launched in 2012 as a taste recommendation engine, so basically it's like a Groupon add-on, Clue claims to combine the latest in machine learning, research in neuroaesthetics, and a pipeline of detailed taste data.
You can't say neuroaesthetics, because all that suggests to me is what your brain looks like. In this case, very smooth.
He's got a very ugly brain. I've seen the scans. A very peculiar brain.
Basically, right, what it says it is.
Oh my god, have you seen the Trump tweet where, like, he manually retweets, this is back in the old days, a guy says, your dad gives good brain, and he retweets it with, it's called genes.
That's right.
Yes, I have seen that. An icon.
Now, this basically, this thing, it's an AI black box, and what it says is it has all of these data inputs, you know, like this to people, age, where they are, what they've bought, what they like, and so on.
Yeah.
And says it has 500, it can predict any taste ever. And what it says it wants to do essentially is more or less take over the cultural industry to AI generate basically whatever companies will do, more or less, which
cool.
is great. Now, but what they say is, no, we're not like an open, it's not like ChatGPT. We're not, it's not like we've, we're just scraped like Reddit to create the unknown. Rather, they have control over their data sources, which means that they just ask people. Either they buy data or they ask people stuff. And you ask how they got that data, it's because in 2012, when they got a whole bunch of money for from Leonardo DiCaprio and Cedric the Entertainer.
So he reinvested his like fee for Killers of the Flower Moon or whatever.
No. Into 2012.
Oh, excuse me.
Oh, it's Wolf of Wall Street money. Okay, yeah.
Well, I mean, that explains a lot about how dumb this is then.
Cedric the Entertainer, then Leonardo DiCaprio, and Elton John have all
walk
put a
into
bunch
a bar.
Of money and all invest in something in 2012.
Yeah. Well, you've got Cedric the Entertainer, Leonardo DiCaprio, and Elton John in a boat, and also a cabbage and chicken, and you have to ferry them across from one side to the other.
So this is from 2013 and how it started. Whenever you sign into Clue, we ask you for 5 clues about your taste in things, co-founder Jay Alger told Stylecaster. Basically, we just ask you for what you love, favorite movie, fashion brand, book, or whatever. And we map the data together. So basically, if I say, well, I like,
Trash Future.
Yeah, sure. I like the Trash Future podcast. I will in 4 years like the Trash Future podcast. This is from 2013.
Stop sending me MILFs!
I also really like, I don't know, the TV show Burn Notice. And then, if someone else likes Trash Future, it'll say, have you considered trying Burn Notice? That's basically all it did, right?
Gotcha.
Have you considered trying building a more equitable society in the lagoon?
So you let the app know that you're obsessed with a brand like Rag & Bone, and it says, based on your taste in Rag & Bone, we think in Chicago you might like the following restaurants, more or less. It says something like Yelp is more generic. Sure. One restaurant has 5 stars, one has 3.
I love Rag & Bone. They buy all my scrap metal.
But whether you're Donald Trump or a protester, you get told the same thing. It's almost dictatorial. But we are forming a taste profile to give you recommendations specific to you. So this quite like rudimentary recommendation engine sort of doesn't do much from 2013 to 2019. And then people start talking about AI and hey, presto, all of a sudden, they acquire another big pipeline of data, this company called Taste Dive, and then are able, again, taking this relatively limited amount of people with these relatively limited amount of connections, they're able to then go to Coca-Cola and be like, we can tell you exactly what celebrities to put on your can if you want people who live in Chicago and drive forklifts who were born in July.
Harold Shipman.
Yeah, perfect.
Weirdly. They don't know who he is. He's just got the right face for Chicago forklift drivers. And in fact, the fact they don't know who he is a bonus.
Here's what I think is actually interesting about this is, you know what? The company has just invested a huge amount of money into Clue. AXA, the insurers.
Oh, good. Okay. You liked something that was bad for you, and your premiums are going to go up.
Oh, well, like people who like Trash Future, they like drink driving, for example.
Exactly. Or like, you know, vaping or something else terrible
but
for
that's
you.
Not even you liked vaping. You liked something that people who like vaping like.
Every day of my fucking life, we invent the social credit system again. And it gets worse and stranger and like less related to anything every time.
Now, we haven't said exactly why AXA is to be clear, AXA hasn't said why they're investing in it, and Clue hasn't said what they're doing with the money from AXA. But we know what it means when an insurance company invests in a huge pipeline of data analytics. It means that
they're going to use it responsibly.
Yeah, of course, always.
Yeah, like alcohol.
Yeah, they're going to find a way to get more premiums out of people and pay them out less, because that's the insurance industry business model. And so I don't understand what else an insurance company would be doing, investing in a thing that tells you what restaurants you would like if you like a certain clothing brand, other than just further stratification of people into good or bad risks based on whether it's like, well, someone who likes, I don't know, Trailer Park Boys has great taste in TV, and so we're going to charge them lower premiums.
Great taste in TV, but like terrible conception of risk, you know? And as such, premiums kind of balance out much the same.
But so, and this is, as you say, right, every day we build more of the social credit system, but this is the social credit system that also helps like Netflix make their, you know, next terrible movie. If you're wondering, like, what are the AI systems that are like helping Netflix to generate stuff? Yeah, it's what they bought in-house. But they claim as well, like, again, always takes when startups make grandiose claims about who they work with, always take that with a grain of salt.
Hmm. So for instance, you liked a Kevin Hart special and Grey Goose Vodka and the concept of theft. Therefore, Netflix has now made the movie Lyft.
Which we will not do another call forward to an episode coming out in May.
Wait, what episode are you talking about?
Oh, it's the episode coming out in May where we watch the Kevin Hart Netflix movie.
Yeah, the movie that we haven't watched yet for the episode that we haven't yet recorded.
Exactly. I genuinely, I got a message from someone who was like, thank you for doing the call forward jokes because it makes me like, so I know what's coming. I subscribe to the Patreon based off of that. So all I'm going to be talking about between now and May is the movie Lyft.
Mm.
So, you know. Thank you to that person.
Let's just do why don't we just do another episode about Lyft? Fuck it. We're gonna watch Lyft again.
Watch it a second time in a way that comes out earlier.
Yeah. It's like Tenet. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The listeners who are moving backwards through the feed will understand it.
That's just someone, I guess, catching up on a podcast. That's what you're describing.
Yeah. Slapping my red patch to move and catch up to the thing. Yeah.
But right, if we don't know if they're actually working with Netflix, right? But if they are, then the same machine that's making the Kevin Hart, that's saying you gotta put Kevin Hart with Vincent D'Onofrio and have him sort of steal an NFT for the quote unquote first time ever,
and then a Chicago Polish welder will buy a Coke.
Yeah, the same thing is being bought by insurers, which is great fun. Again, also, if something is being invested in by an insurance company's venture arm, it could come to nothing. But it also shows what are they interested in? What do they think the frontiers are of what they're going to be able to do with information?
Hmm. I mean, in that case, they're, I guess, quite optimistic about this in a way that is depressing.
Oh, good.
That's just a quick one for Clue. I want to finish this off by asking, what the hell is going on in the did we do war crimes in Afghanistan inquiry that Johnny Mercer seems to be fronting?
Yes. So basically, this has been a fairly long-running public inquiry investigating allegations that, as you say, particularly the SAS, during the course of the war in Afghanistan, committed a shitload of war crimes, most of them on the theme of killing unarmed civilians in houses they raided, and then fitting them up to make them look like terrorists, right?
Mm.
Like carrying an extra, like an AK with you, and like sprinkling some AK on the guy's body who you just shot for no reason. And Johnny Mercer, veterans minister, ex-troop himself, is now in this position where he's testified to the inquiry that he knows about some war crimes that they did, but he's not going to tell them about it. And I think it's so funny that what you've got here is a Tory MP who is essentially forced into a conflict of personal honor, the likes of which you don't see outside the Samurai or the Gambino crime family. Because he's like, genuinely, he's going, well, I have people telling me that they did war crimes, or that they were ordered to commit war crimes or asked to commit war crimes. And then the judge in charge of the inquiry says, well, will you name them so that we can investigate it? And he goes, no, because as a former army officer, I love the army and I don't want to, like, I didn't want to believe it, and I don't want to like impugn the reputation of it. And so you have this strange thing where the guy is essentially talking, he's violating omerta by talking about how cool he thinks the Omerta is and how much he believes in it.
Yeah, and nice.
I think it's really funny that, like, you've ended up in this situation where, like, he's not willing to testify in a way that sates the body that, like, can actually compel him to do that. But in the course of saying how he won't do that, he has pissed off everyone involved so badly that he may as well have done. It's like if Serpico never actually ratted on anyone. If he was just like, no, I won't take a bribe. And everyone around him was like, this motherfucker, he must be dirty.
The only way they could get Johnny Mercer to testify against these men would be if some of these, you know, former soldiers were to have insinuated that Johnny Mercer's wife was a prostitute on the Plymouth Herald comments section. Then that would free him from his Bushido code of honor.
Yeah. I mean, it is genuine. Like, it's serious, obviously, because, like, in particular, the stuff that he's describing, the place where there is no love lost is between him and, like, senior army officers, like generals, right? And he describes, like, how he went to the then director of special forces, a guy called Roland Walker, and went, hey, is any of this true? It seems like it might be, and it probably shouldn't be because it's bad. And the guy just, like, kind of, like, shrugs his shoulders at him. And I think it's worth mentioning that because that guy, that general that he talked to, is going to be the next chief of the general staff. And I think a lot of the army is like in this kind of stranglehold of former special forces officers, right? Because it was something that like sounded cool and tactical and was selective and elite. And people thought that that was all the army was going to be doing until Ukraine. And so now, all of the guys who covered this shit up and who are now getting like thoroughly embarrassed by Johnny Mercer in a way that like previously people who embarrassed people like that ended up, you know, inside the boots of their own cars. Those people are now basically untouchable because they're in those positions in the hierarchy anyway. And it's just, it's really grim. But at the same time, I have sort of like, I'm trying to decide whether or not I feel bad for Johnny Mercer because by instinct, I never want to feel bad for a Tory MP. And his previous kind of like cause was preventing historical prosecutions of war crimes in Northern Ireland. But when he was confronted with like the modern incarnation, he was like, oh, well, this like offends my sense of honor in a way that I'm like now torn between the institution. I almost respect him for like earnestly believing it, you know, to his real detriment.
Well, it's a... Johnny Mercer, to me, seems like someone who was always meant to be a kind of propaganda officer.
Artillery, close enough.
No one has ever, I think, believed so much in the importance of Britain abroad, you might say. No, there are very few Tories who are still as, or very few front bench Tories who are still as concerned with Britain doing army stuff rather than culture war stuff. Like he's on the right side of the culture war of the early 2000s, which basically makes him a liberal by today's standards.
Yeah, he's basically like General Wesley Clark.
Yeah.
As insane as that is. To be like, no, to do these war crimes, like obviously to investigate the war crimes is very bad, but to like do them in the first place is shameful. And it's like that weird kind of halfway house that you land in of like, well, we certainly shouldn't do anything about it. Because, you know, you cover the institution's nakedness first. Is
what I sort of I'm sort of instinctively thinking of here as well is the American special forces are, well, again, American special forces have been allowed to let's say I don't run large scale drug smuggling rings for a long time, but they seem to be able to do it now more as freelancers and for themselves rather than, I don't know, for the institution itself. And it seems unthinkable that there would be something similar happening in the States, if you get my meaning.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, because also, like, when, you know, like, the British Special Forces do some war crimes, but, like, the American Special Forces do, like, parody war crimes. Like, the Navy SEALs went into a village and shot everyone, and then were like, yeah, they were all terrorists, bye. Like, you know, it's like...
But that was this. That was genuinely this. It was the same thing. It's just, it was done with, like, more Britishness about it. And I think that's the distinction, right? Is that, like, because we don't have the same kind of, like, even, like, disconnection from the troops that Americans have. We have this, like, entirely different relationship to our military. What happened is we ended up with like a pretty British cover-up, which is that, like, you know, a guy with a lot of kind of insignia on just kind of like shrugs his shoulders at it. The thing that I always come back to is there was this email that the Royal Military Police, they investigated this, and then their investigation got like shut down without uncovering anything. It was part of the cover-up. But they found this email from an SAS like regimental sergeant major who was, and the subject line was like, another massacre in like all caps with like five exclamation marks, with the kind of like world weary tone of like, you know, like, oh, they've fucking done it again.
Yeah, I remember we read all those like the officers reports as well, when they were writing up stuff that had been handed to them by like sergeants and stuff, and they were just like, another grenade hidden behind a curtain. You couldn't make it up in block capitals.
Yeah, exactly. And so now Johnny Mercer is like caught in the middle of this. And I mean, it's very, very strange, you know, because I don't think there are many politicians left who would be compromised by a sense of like personal feeling like this.
He's going to have to go on the rest of his politics now. That's the only way forward. He's going to be slightly tougher Rory Stewart.
Yeah, I mean, basically what this is waiting for is for someone to see this happening, go, okay, well, clearly, like, trying to do the, like, change within the system thing doesn't work. Even trying to lightly criticize the system in a way that still covers for it doesn't work. The only option is to leak a shitload of documents to journalists. And on the off chance we have any listeners slightly outside Hereford who are waiting to do that, please, it is the only thing that moves the needle on this.
Now, I think that there are other elements of this as well, right? Which is just sort of going back to the this is larger than, you know, this, the management of the institution, right? This is the cover up goes even wider, where like the SAS was blocking UK visas for Afghan soldiers, basically because they were like, well, you saw us do this, so if you come here, you may tell someone.
Yeah, because there was this breakdown where these Afghan special forces units like refused to go out with the SAS, with UK special forces, because of the war crimes they were committing. And now that these sort of like Afghan special forces guys are trying to get visas to come to the UK, that's exactly what's happening, is that like the SAS have a veto and they go, well, no, because this guy like saw us commit war crimes. And it's deeply, deeply cynical in a way that's, you know, familiar to anyone who knows anything about British military history. But in a way that I think Johnny Mercer particularly finds like personally embarrassing and shameful. And so now is put into this strange kind of situation where he's like, well, I'm going to say that I know that it happened and that there are witnesses, but not who any of them are, you know? And I think that's a really odd hill to die on, you know?
Johnny, number one, we know Johnny Mercer loves an odd hill to die on. That is like one of the main things about this.
Well, I mean, he was in the British Army at the end of the day. But he was on a hill 4 miles behind the hill that the other people were dying on. So he'd have had to have been pretty unfortunate to die on it. It would have been an odd hill to die on.
Yeah, at the same time, I think we also know that like that Britain is, especially when it comes to its military, a kind of a country struggling for relevance, you know, eager to get involved in any war and commit any atrocity so that it can be seen as serious. And, you know, to see, I think, almost the naivety of someone like Mercer, who was sort of so dismayed that the story did not line up with the reality, such that he was willing to basically lie to the House of Commons multiple times, you know, that it would be, that it is just another, I think, lens on this country having a kind of what you call in a small dog short leg syndrome.
Are you suggesting that we could like meaningfully push Johnny Mercer to the left? We could make him woke on this.
I think we could do more than that. Not so much that, but that it is quite telling what does and doesn't get discussed as well. And it is, I think, it's unfortunate as per usual that, you know, that all of the institutions around it, whether that's the MOD or the press, really are making it once again more about the question of did he lie, rather than how come a bunch of, you know, Hereford guys living just outside Hereford have ear necklaces, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, for sure.
Anyway, if I look at the old timer, I think that's once again probably all we have time for today. So I want to thank once again everyone for listening. Remind you that there is a Patreon for $5 a month. You can subscribe to it. You can get second episodes every week. You can get Britannologies. You can get Left Unread. You know the deal.
Yeah. You can be Johnny Mercer if you subscribe to the $100 tier.
You can be Johnny Mercer if you subscribe to the $100. That's right. We will send you a birth certificate that says Johnny Mercer.
Well, you can go to the immersive Johnny Mercer experience where people on the Plymouth Herald comment section insinuate that your wife is a prostitute.
The unknown keeps talking about Johnny Mercer's wife and so ends with Johnny Mercer fighting the unknown.
Yeah. But you're 3 miles away from the unknown, but you have a map and a radio, and people are radioing you the coordinates of the unknown and saying things like splash, drop 20, fire for effect. Also, please buy tickets to my Australian tour. It's soon. Brisbane, Melbourne, Sydney, Newcastle, Canberra, Adelaide, Perth, all of those. Dates available, tickets, buy them. Thanks.
Alice Springs, sorry.
My website. Sorry, Does Alice she? Springs. There is a show in Alice Springs, but you can't come. I'm doing my secret racist hour in Alice Springs under a pseudonym.
Johnny Mercer.
It's called the Willy Wonka Experience. Yeah, that's right.
We also are doing a live show. Live show, live show, live show, live show.
13th of March.
Yeah, there might be a special guest who may or may not be the unknown.
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. Well, it's unknown who the guest might
that's
be.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah. Mm.
Yes, that's right. So do come to that.
Yes.
Otherwise, we will see you on the bonus episode in a couple short days. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.